Welcome to today's Family Experience, helping families connect in a world that's pulling families apart. My name is Chuck Hagley. I'm the Executive Director of Project Patch and your host for today, and I'm so glad that you joined us for this topic. I hope that the title did not scare you away. It's one of those things that maybe you're not used to seeing, or maybe you've got a lot of baggage around it. Thinking back to the youth group days when they met in youth group and shared all sorts of scary things about abstinence, and maybe they used the word chastity instead of abstinence. And so all sorts of memories maybe are being drawn up right now. But I am so excited that you joined us for this podcast, because our guest today, Arlene Spensley, is going to be a real encouragement. She's a young woman who's really leading a charge that I think more people need to get involved with. It's a story that I'll let her share as we do the interview. But one of the things I just want to challenge you as you listen to this, please be open to maybe hearing from a different perspective. The reality is that most of us have go on autopilot when we hear certain concepts or certain words, and maybe we don't hear it out. And so I just really invite you to listen carefully. For parents that are listening, this is stuff that can really help your kids. But I think when you're done listening to this, you'll realize that it is something that can actually change you and help you too, because chastity is not just for our kids, it's for all of us. So I'm going to welcome on, just for a couple things that we didn't get into the podcast. Arlene and I met at the launch conference, which I went to about a month ago. Really hit it off because both of us are really working at how to help kids and young adults in this world that's really pulling them apart. And so really exciting to get to know her. Just as a background, she does have a bachelor's degree in journalism, but she also has a master's degree in rehabilitation and mental health. And so she brings not just her own experience, her own faith, but she brings in a framework that's backed up with some really good science, some really good study that she's done. Hey, thank you so much for joining me. I'm glad to talk to you again. We had a great time meeting at the launch conference, and every time we talked at the launch conference, we lost track of time, but had all sorts of neat things to talk about. So welcome to the podcast. Glad to have you with us today.
Thank you so much, Chuck. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
So now we're talking all the way across the country. You're in the sunny state of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Well known for really uptight people, right? Florida's.
Well, it gets so hot here. We're all just a little frustrated. It's actually 93 degrees outside right now, and I'm loving it, actually.
You're loving the heat. What's interesting, I want to have you tell your story a little bit, and part of what I find out of your story is that there are so many things that are surprising about it. You know, one, you're from Tampa, and Tampa has a reputation of being this fairly sin-soaked little city. You know, at least for the rest of us on the other coast, you know, when we think of Tampa, we don't necessarily think of some of the topic that we're talking about today, which is chastity. And so our audience is going to be in for a real neat time talking about that. But before we get into the chastity and before people start freaking out a little bit, you have always considered yourself a writer. Can you tell me about your story as a kid and being a writer?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh gosh, I've been writing since before preschool, maybe. I don't know. Do kids write in preschool? I think they do. I remember being very young and always loving to read and loving being read to, you know, by my mom. And there came a point when I wanted to tell my own stories. And so I remember once as a kid dictating a story to my mom, and she typed it on her typewriter. And, you know, then I drew pictures to go along with it and created a little book. And it was just something I always enjoyed. And so as I entered school, English was always my favorite subject. And I just kept writing and writing. And it was always something that teachers encouraged, because I think they saw something in me. They saw a talent and fostered it for me. And so I've been writing my entire life, as far as I'm concerned. And it wasn't until high school that I knew I wanted to do it professionally. And I think I was in 10th grade when I decided I was going to study journalism in college. And that is exactly what I did. And I was a senior in high school when I started actually writing for the Tampa Bay Times. I was not hired on staff as an 18-year-old senior in high school, but I was hired as a correspondent. So I wrote freelance feature stories, fun stuff for the local couple of sections of the Tampa Bay Times, and I would definitely say that was miraculous in some ways, because I just don't think a lot of kids really have that opportunity, and I'm so, so, so grateful for it, because that was ultimately the foot in the door that got me hired at the Tampa Bay Times.
And I think that's so amazing, Erlene, because you're this teenager, you're this little kid that's dreaming of writing, reading a bunch of books. Eventually you get your journalism degree, but before you're even, I guess, I don't know what the right word for you guys is, but credentialed in the sense of you know, having all the degrees on the wall, and you went out and got a job and you're just doing it.
Yeah.
So as you imagine, So as you imagined yourself writing a book someday, what did you hope to write?
You know, I never really knew. There was always a part of me that wanted to write a book. And I guess the time was just never right to sit down and discern what would be, you know, the best topic. But so I never really had anything particular in mind until, of course, I wrote what I'm infamous for, which is what I call the sex essay, the first sex essay that I wrote for the Tampa Bay Times. Then I knew exactly what I would eventually write a book about, because the public responded in some pretty unexpected ways, and I knew this was a topic that people needed to talk about.
So if I remember correctly, you're 23 years old, you were writing for the Tampa Bay Times. And how did that article come to being? And when you wrote it, did you think that this was going to be a big deal?
Well, I was 23, and I had just gotten out of a relationship with a guy who I never should have dated, to be honest with you. He and I did not define sex the same way. He wasn't Christian. I was. There were all of these discrepancies between us that were red flags that I ignored. And I dated him, and I realized very quickly that he was not okay with my practicing chastity, and he certainly didn't practice it either. And so I had to make a choice, and I did, and I ended the relationship. But afterward, I was reflecting on it, and I started to realize that if this one guy has no idea what chastity is and doesn't understand why someone would save sex for marriage, that there are probably a lot of other people in the culture that surrounds me that don't know what chastity is either, or who don't understand why someone would make the choice to practice it. And so I thought, I work for Florida's largest newspaper. Why don't I just write an essay about chastity? Why don't I just put it in the paper? And so I approached an editor at work, and I said, listen, I'm a virgin. Never had sex before, and I want to put it in the paper because I want people to understand why I've made this choice. And he was like, okay, let's do it, you know, and I was like, all right, great. And I was really excited at first, and then something kind of weird happened, and I began to get afraid. I began to not really have an interest in finishing this essay, because I started to fear that, you know, people would make fun of me, or that my colleagues would be really uncomfortable knowing this about me every day when I walk into the newsroom. And I worried, you know, what would our readers think? How would they respond? And so I actually backed out. I approached the editor again, and I said, on second thought, I don't think that I should really write this essay. And he responded, then he said he understood, but he also listed some reasons why he thought I should consider writing it anyway, transcending that fear and doing this. And I actually don't remember what it was that he said, but thank God I actually did follow through, and I finished the essay and it printed. And, you know, I knew at some level that it was going to incite some responses. I knew that was going to happen. What I didn't know was that those responses were going to come in as quickly as 30 minutes after the essay appeared on the internet, and that they were going to keep coming for 2 years. It wasn't, you know, overwhelming for 2 years, but for 2 years, I was hearing from people in response to this essay. And, you know, I had kind of gone into this saying, like, I think our readers really need to just read about chastity. But what I was learning by, you know, reading those responses and receiving phone calls and emails and things at work is that people needed to talk about it. There was something that was striking chords, and there was also something that was striking nerves in the people who read what I wrote. And so that's how kind of my blog was born, and eventually more sex essays. And then, of course, my book, Chastity is for Lovers, came from that as well.
You know, there's so many things packed in there that is just amazing. as you were sharing, you really had to come out as pure and chaste.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that seems so weird because there's so, I mean, especially dealing with the teens that we have right now, that coming out is, you know, this, I'm revealing myself, and there's such an encouragement, especially in the media nowadays, for kids to declare themselves as some sort of, homosexual, lesbian, gay, whatever. So the coming out story is highly encouraged. But you had the, you know, you're coming out as pure and godly.
Mm-hmm.
And felt a lot of fear about that, which is pretty interesting as a young adult in this century. To do that is an anomaly rather than a regular thing.
Absolutely, yeah. It's weird because, you know, I had never really had a reason to discuss this with somebody. I had barely dated. Obviously, it's something that's just very relevant in a dating relationship. So that, you know, that certainly came up with guys, but even among friends, I think it was just not something that really came up. And so I knew I was going to have to take a leap. Like I knew that if I didn't do this, if I didn't put chastity in the paper, and if I didn't admit to being a virgin and being okay, then many people were going to live their entire lives thinking that no one's a virgin, thinking that no one can be a virgin and be happy, which isn't true. Mm-hmm. And so part of, I think, what gave me that willingness to just suck it up and mm-hmm. do it, like transcend that fear, that initial fear, was knowing that somebody's going to read what I write and they're not going to feel alone anymore. And I think that's so important because chastity is a virtue that requires community. You can't live your whole life practicing a virtue that protects sex, you know, that keeps it sacred, and not have people in your life who believe that's a good idea. You just, we're human. We need people around us who are going to encourage us rather than discourage us. And in this culture, it can be really hard, especially regarding saving sex, that it can be very hard to find people who are supportive of that. And so I wanted to be that person for people, even if, you know, it was from afar, even if it was someone I didn't meet in real life.
Mm-hmm. And really what you're saying is that you entered into that fear, but the value of community, knowing that scripturally you were on solid ground.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Left you saying, okay, I can do this. I can do this. But at the same time, as soon as this happened, you suddenly realized that there was a hunger for this topic being talked about in, I wouldn't say blunt, but in a straightforward, non-ashamed manner.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I had feedback from all sorts of people. I heard from, you know, parents of teens and tweens who had been previously convinced that their kids were growing up in a world where saving sex is impossible, where practicing chastity is impossible. And when they read what I wrote, they were like, oh my gosh, like here's someone who is proving that wrong. And mm-hmm. so they were finding some hope for the kids they were raising. And I heard also from, I was surprised by a few like elderly men and women, particularly a couple of men who read what I wrote and felt compelled to email me to share that, you know, they had made some decisions when they were younger. And after reading what I wrote, they felt remorse for some of those decisions. They felt like they had hurt some of the women in their lives when they were young. And it was almost like they kind of just wanted to apologize, even though it wasn't me. I wasn't the ones whose feelings they had hurt for whatever reason. But they, you know, it was kind of drawing out of people what they needed to get off their chest. It was really amazing to me.
Mm-hmm.
I was grateful that people were so willing to share with me their own struggles and their own successes, even, you know, hearing from married couples who had saved sex for marriage, who just sent me notes or called me up just to encourage me and to thank me for expressing what they had never really expressed, although they were living it with their lives.
Mm-hmm. So here's an interesting thing is that it's easy, especially as a conversation piece, to talk about virginity. But really, you're wanting to talk about chastity. Can you
Yes.
really tell me about, you know, throwing in some of these words, virginity, chastity, abstinence? How do you define chastity, and how does it apply to these other words?
Okay, So there's a story I tell in my book and also in my most recent sex essay about walking through a parking lot at work. I used to work in one of our offices in Pasco County, Florida, and it was next door to a Dunkin' Donuts. And so every day at 3 o'clock, we would walk next door to Dunkin' Donuts. And we were on our walk one afternoon, walking through the parking lot. We passed my car. And at that time, my car had a bumper sticker on it that said, "Chastity is for lovers," which is where we got the title of my book. But as we're passing my car, a colleague of mine looks at the bumper sticker and he knows it's my car. And he just finally had to ask. It was something I guess that had been on his mind for a while. And he was like, "How can chastity be for lovers if it means you can't have sex?"
Hmm.
And I said, "It doesn't. It doesn't. Because chastity and abstinence aren't the same." But let me explain how they're related. So chastity is a virtue. And I'm a Catholic Christian, and so according to the Catholic Church, a virtue is defined as a habitual and firm disposition to do good. So in other words, it's like a decision that we make over and over, and if we fail, we try again, but it's a decision we do make every day to do the right thing. And then chastity is one of many virtues. So also according to the Catholic Church, chastity is what we would call like a successful integration of sexuality within the person. So that makes chastity this decision we make over and over to do the right thing regarding sex. So what is sex? Sex is a sacred physical sign of the vows that a husband and wife made at the altar where they were married. It's like an expression mm-hmm. of the unity achieved by matrimony. And so chastity isn't abstinence, because chastity applies also to sex. We all make that decision to do the right thing regarding sex. Married people have to make the decision to do the right thing regarding sex, and single people do as well. It just looks a little bit different for each of us. So for a single person like me, an unmarried person, chastity would imply that we save sex for marriage. We abstain from sex because of what sex is.
Mm-hmm.
That's a physical sign that's reserved for husbands and wives. And then, of course, within a marriage, people also practice chastity. We have to make the right decisions as husbands and wives regarding sex, which means we don't use or abuse each other, and we respect each other. And we, certainly in Catholicism, I don't want to open up a can of worms here, but in Catholicism, we would also say, we are open to life in
yeah.
sex, meaning don't use contraception. And that's a way to kind of respect the way God created bodies, which is part of that virtue of chastity. And so it's funny how over the years of writing this, one of the top pieces of feedback I've gotten from people who have never been introduced to chastity is that they think it's the same as abstinence. And so even at for instance, church-related conferences and things where I've had booths where I'm selling books or shirts, I've had married women come up to me and they're like, "This is so great, but it doesn't apply to me."
Hmm.
And I'll say, "I think you don't know what chastity is. Let me tell you about it," and so that's become part of my mission, is just make sure people know what chastity is and how we all are called to live it.
And I think that is amazing, because and I come from an evangelical background, so we don't necessarily have the virtues, but that concept is something that so many times we focus on the negative,
mm-hmm.
What we don't want to do. And really what chastity is, what we do want to do. It's the most complete idea of what God is,
mm-hmm.
into the, whatever topic it is. And so many times we, let me give example is that our kids, we don't want our kids to lie. And so a lot of times parents focus on lying, but really the trait that we want to encourage is truth telling,
mm-hmm.
That honesty and so when we're thinking about sexuality and just kind of getting into this topic, is it's so easy to think about abstinence and virginity, but what we're really driving for is, what does it mean for our sexuality to belong to God,
mm-hmm.
something that He created and that is given to us for life. But it does manifest itself differently depending on whether we're in a marriage or as a single person. In a marriage, you steward it together.
Absolutely. If we teach kids abstinence, but we don't teach them chastity, there's a huge element that's missing, because like you were saying, you know, you want to teach kids honesty, but we also need to teach kids, what does healthy, holy sexuality look like? How does it look to live out your life in a healthy and holy way regarding sexuality? And so if we're just teaching abstinence, we're basically just challenging kids not to have sex. But chastity challenges us to so much more, like living as though desire is subservient to reason. You know, that's the sort of thing that equips us to love like Jesus, really, mm-hmm. to love selflessly and to say, you know what, I might have this urge, but I'm going to be in control of that urge. That urge is not going to control me. And that's how we were created. God created us able to rise above temptation. He created us able to do it. And we live in a culture that doesn't like that. You know, we live in a culture that thinks, you know, we should be governed by our urges. We should just do what we want when we want to do it. But prudence tells us that we shouldn't. And, you know, I'm glad that I said the word prudence, because I wasn't planning to say that. But I do want to bring up another bit of feedback I've gotten from people, particularly who don't approve of practicing chastity. They say that I'm a prude. You know, they say that I'm a prude. And I just want people to know that there is a difference between being a prude and being prudent. A prude is probably a person who maybe unreasonably doesn't participate or acknowledge certain things that exist in the world. But a person who is prudent is a person who is planning for the future, a person mm-hmm. who is making decisions with the future in mind. And I think that's so important, because, you know, it's responsible and it's rational and it's you know, I mean, we look at the world we live in. We see so many things around us that are the result of imprudence, the result of negligence, the result of not taking the proper steps to have a positive outcome. And so I just think it's really important, you know, especially if there are others out there, people who are listening, who either they themselves or their kids are getting some flack for their decisions to save sex or to practice chastity. You know, we're not prudes. We're just making
things. Well, and I think that's I'm really glad you brought that up, because you know how a lot of parents go about trying to teach their kids about, especially about sexuality, is really in this context of fear, mm-hmm. separation, ignorance, you know, and so you end up developing kids that are prude, that are really afraid of things, and they're afraid of pleasure. You know, they into their minds get this idea that if it feels good, it must be bad. And so that does result in marriages eventually in which, you know, there's a huge fear around sexuality. You know, they haven't planned for it. They haven't prepared for it. They've actually bring into the marriage quite a bit of shame and fear. And so as a parent, it's easy to develop kids that are prude and fearful, but to, you know, develop a kid that's prudent, self-governing, self-disciplined, That's a whole different ball game.
Absolutely. Oh, it's so, so, so important. And, you know, I feel as though there's this idea circulating in a lot of Christian circles. I was a student, by the way, at a Protestant school for 8 years, from 5th through 12th grade. And so I kind of had, you know, the Catholic upbringing plus the Protestant upbringing, you know, in a way. And so I have, you know, all of these experiences that have really shaped me. And you know, one of the things that I've observed is that there is this kind of tendency to build a wall between kids and sex. And you know, you don't want anybody to know. They don't want the kids to know what's at the other side of that wall. I think the idea is kind of rooted in the belief that, you know, if kids know too much about sex, they're going to go out and have sex. When I really think, if we look at the world, do you think that sex is what it is because too many kids got great sex education? You know, is sexuality treated the way it is because kids know a lot about sex? I don't think that's true. I think sex is misused the way it is because no one ever told these kids what sex is. No one ever defined it. They just said, don't do it. And then they were left to kind of concoct their own definition of it based on the sources they had access to, which has mostly been the media or friends. And you know, we can't trust that the media obviously is going to define sex as a sacred physical sign of the vows that a husband and wife made at the altar where they were married. And I think if kids knew what sex really is, and if they knew what love really is, that this world would be a better place, and that kids would grow up into those prudent, self-governing, Christians, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think another aspect of that, that I think introducing this as chastity rather than focus on virginity is that, you know, I've talked to teens over and over and over that, you know, both boys and girls that in a situation, even with a lot of conviction to be virgins until they're married, they got in a situation, way over their heads, in a relationship and ended up having sex. And, you know, the amount of shame and disgust and all that stuff with when, you know, that came with it, just left them feeling abandoned from God, unloved. And for some of the kids, it resulted in them like, oh, well, I'm a screw up. I might as well, you know, go for a big time. And they really went into, you know, hypersexualized lives because they blew it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, that's another great part about teaching chastity as opposed to teaching abstinence, is because like abstinence is very limited in the sense that if somebody does have sex, if somebody slips up in whatever way, there's nothing. It's like there's nothing left. Whereas chastity doesn't hold the past against you. You know, I always try to make it clear, especially when I'm speaking at churches or campus ministries, you know, I like to make it clear that, you know, whatever you have done, that doesn't mean you can't decide today to do the right thing regarding sex. That's what chastity is about. It's about deciding today, and it's a decision we make every day. And so if whatever happened, happened, but we can move on in a different direction today. And chastity leaves room for that, whereas I don't think abstinence really does.
And so really there's some people out there that you're talking to that push back, you know, at the concept that you're doing. You know, you mentioned a little earlier that media has its own storyline going here. For the young adults and teens that you talk to that are arguing for not being chaste, what are they telling you?
For the most part, I get a lot of, well, don't you need to know that you're sexually compatible with a person before you marry them, before you agree to only have sex with this person for your whole life? And that's kind of the one that I think is the funniest, because it implies really that sex is static, that it's never going to change, and that it will always be exactly the same as it was the first time or the first couple times. And, you know, a couple things that I say in response to that are sex isn't static. Obviously, I have never had it, so I don't know that from experience, but I've spoken with a lot of people, done a lot of interviews, taken a human sexuality class in grad school, and sex is something that changes and that requires communication and practice and trial and error. And if people aren't expecting that, you know, that could pose a problem for some marriages. But another thing that I say in response to that is that, you know, the quest superficially is for sexual compatibility, but based on the rationale that is being provided to me when somebody says, oh, well, you have to know that you're sexually compatible, what they really want is effortless compatibility or intuitive compatibility. They want to be able to jump into bed on their wedding night and be gratified without any effort, or to be gratified intuitively. And that's just not realistic, and it also doesn't align at all with selfless love. You know, it makes sex about what you get rather than what you give. You know, it's supposed to be this kind of mutual gift of self, and it's not that when the primary purpose is pleasure. You know, we believe that as Christians that sex is not for pleasure primarily. It's for procreation, and it's for unity. It's for expressing that unity. And then of course pleasure is a bonus. But in the world around us, pleasure is the goal, and babies are a byproduct. You know,
yeah. That's fantastic that you say that, because as there's so many kids out there, and I think marriages are, it's hard to be married. You know, marriage isn't an easy thing. But that process of I'm learning, I'm giving, there's vulnerability, there's expressing things that might feel awkward. You know, all that skill set is what marriages need for vibrancy, not just in the bedroom, but for everyday type things, you know, being able to connect and to, I mean, that power is there, but for so many couples, they believe that that's natural. I've got the person, you know, and it doesn't take work. It's either there or it's not.
Yeah. That is a misconception.
And so when it comes to marriage, if it's not there, it must mean that my marriage is bad. mm-hmm. you know, and that I should find, go off and find the ultimate person. And really that creates a bunch of, you know, half-hearted, half-committed people that get into, I mean, no wonder there's so much divorce, you know, I must have married the wrong person. No, marriage is just plain hard.
Absolutely. I think there's this notion that, you know, love is something you can fall out of, that love is something that spontaneously ends. And so that's what I've seen a lot of in marriages, whether it's directly related to the sexual part of the relationship or other parts of the relationship. But it's like, oh, well, you know, it just fell out of love, you know, love stopped. but the thing is, like, love ends when you decide that it ends. That's when love ends. And, mm-hmm. and so I think, you know, it's unfortunate that our culture is so, confused about what love is. And, you know, there's a great quote from St. John Paul II. He says that love is the authentic commitment of the free will of one person as a result of the truth about another person. And so, I mean, there's just so much in that quote that we could unpack. But the two things about it that I love are, number one, that it's a commitment. You know, it's a decision that you make, and that's part one. And then part two is, it's, you know, as a result of the truth about a person, which implies so much. It implies that when we're dating, we have to discover the truth about the person we're dating. That's really the point. That's how I've always defined dating, you know, since I started writing about this stuff, is to discover the truth about a person and then decide, knowing that truth, whether this is a person to whom you would like to commit in marriage, to whom it makes sense to commit in marriage. Will you two become holier as a result of associating with each other in this way, or are you becoming worse people because you're trying to make something work that isn't designed for you? And so, you know, I try to, especially when I'm speaking to college students and other young adults, you know, I'll say, you know, there are questions we have to ask, hard questions that we have to ask ourselves when we're interested in somebody or when we're dating somebody. We have to ask, you know, do I like this person? Do I actually like this person, who they truly are? And do I care if someday I have a kid who grows up and turns into this person? Am I okay with that? Because sometimes I've had some friends and acquaintances who have flat out told me, I don't even like this guy. And I'm like, why are you dating him? You know? And it's worked the other way as well. I've had male friends who brought up the fact that, you know, gosh, this woman, she's not who I thought she was. And it's okay to walk away. You're not married. This is the point. You have to discover the truth. And is this a person that you would want to be the parent to your future kids? Is this somebody who you would want to, you know, walk alongside on the way to heaven? You know, is that what you can see? And if not, then know the truth and it's time to move on.
Well, what's amazing is we've had this conversation. We started off the day with an essay that you, or a opinion piece that you weren't sure you should write. You tried to get out of it. You know, and 6 years later, you're teaching young adults how to date. At the same time, you're in the throes of, you know, all this, in a sense, it's put you on a stage that personally holds you to probably a higher level of authenticity and accountability.
Absolutely. I always say, you know, when that first sex essay came out, we had 400,000 readers on a Sunday. That's how many driveways my essay ended up in. And so I always kind of joke, I have 400,000 accountability partners. There are people all over the Tampa Bay area and beyond, obviously now, who know a lot about me. I've put a lot of myself into what I've written, and I actually really appreciate it. And I think it's fantastic to know that, that I don't have a choice. You know, like I am dedicated, and I've always been dedicated, and it helps me, as a person who practices chastity in a culture that calls me crazy for doing it. Mm-hmm. It helps me to know that I have the support of all these readers who have reached out, and that that I am not alone. I'm not alone in my own journey as a chaste young adult.
So you've created this community around you, and really that there's huge, like you said at the start, there's huge power in that. You know, one of the things that I've seen little snippets where you've mentioned in your writing is that you really believe that the parents in raising kids can do more when it comes to not only discussions, but in how they help their kids with chastity. Can you share that with some of the parents that are listening?
Sure. So it's funny. I'll get a question a lot. Like, what did your parents do? How did your parents teach you, you know, what did you learn that, you know, others didn't? Because, you know, I'm one of, you know, very few 29-year-old virgins who are, you know, around. And you know, I always start by telling the story about when I got the sex talk from my mom. I was in fourth grade, and we sat at the dining room table, and there was a napkin on the table, and she took the napkin and a Bic pen, and she drew a uterus, and it was very thorough. It was a very thorough sex talk, and you know, I use that story to illustrate not, you know, how great an artist my mom is. It was a really, you know, good rendition of uterus, I'm just going to be honest, but it was, you know, it's not, that's not what it's about. It's about her openness and her honesty. I think that's important. I grew up in a house where there were no taboo topics. No taboo topics. My mom especially made it very clear that if we had a question about anything, we could ask. And that, I think, is huge. That, I think, is huge because if, you know, if we don't discuss something, we're implying that it's not relevant. We're implying that it's not important. That's part of why, you know, primarily my target audience has actually been young adults, because I have found that, especially in churches where I speak probably most, this conversation tends to end when youth group does. And then it's kind of the onus is on the kid when they get to college to involve themselves in some sort of ministry. But if there is no ministry, or if there is nothing that they can, you know, work into their schedules, then there is no more conversation about sex. There is no more conversation about chastity. And so if we're not talking about it, we're implying that it's not important or not relevant. And that's never true, because chastity is relevant from birth until death. And so along those same lines, in a household growing up, if a kid grows up knowing implicitly or explicitly that sex is not a thing we discuss, what does that imply? What does that imply?
Yeah. And I guess a couple things that stood out from that is, I mean, that the parents will always tell their kids the truth. And that's easy to say, but it's really hard to do. I mean, I mean, for our family, I during my seminars, when we're talking about this, I talk about Justin Bieber and how my girls found out something about how Justin Bieber treats women. And it led into one of a really challenging talk. But I say, praise God, it happened, just because we've committed to always tell our kids the truth. But that's not always easy to do, you know, in an age appropriate way. But if we aren't telling our kids truth, where are they getting it from? You know, they're getting it from their friends that are just as ignorant, or media, which has an agenda. And so that combination of truth telling and even if it's hard, doing it anyway. And then, you know, just that fact that as a parent, you talked about youth group being the end of talking about sexuality, and really that focus was on abstinence probably.
Yeah, in most cases, unfortunately, yes.
And so as a church, and I've noticed this too, I mean, from the churches I speak at, we do a long analogy, and I'll post something about that at a different time. I think you and I talked about it with the chocolate and carob.
Right.
But here's the problem is that because chastity, because of sexuality not being really discussed openly in you know, for young adults and for married people, there's a huge gap there. You know, discomfort, and couples that are really engaging in, you know, self-centered, selfish sexuality that isn't long-term fulfilling.
Absolutely.
You know, so that combination of parents that are, you know, chaste, being able to encourage that and model it for their kids in a healthy sexuality is, I mean, that's huge what you're saying right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's important that there's the modeling, there's the discussion, and just that openness, you know, you know, if parents are willing to discuss anything with their kids are going to discuss it with them. They're going to know that it's okay. They're going to know that it's safe. Mm-hmm. But if parents are unwilling, then you're right. Kids are going to go to other sources. You know, they're going to come up with their own kind of conception of sex or whatever the topic might be, based on whatever they do have access to, which, you know, in this culture, is usually going to be TV or movies, mm-hmm. or friends at school, you know, and it's really unfortunate to me. I was thinking about this the other day, actually, not even regarding sex, but regarding love, regarding authentic Christ-like love. It dawned on me while I was eating dinner at a restaurant the other night that there are people who have grown up who are now adults who have never had authentic love modeled for them, and they have never had it defined for them. And I just, that really breaks my heart, mm-hmm. because, I mean, how sad is it that people can actually go their whole lives not knowing that, you know, that what they're maybe doing within their own marriages isn't real love, you know, because mm-hmm. and it's not their fault. They don't know. No one told them. Yeah. And so I've kind of made it my mission, one of several parts of my mission, to really make sure that I'm presenting love and presenting sex and presenting chastity in ways that are genuine and authentic. And that way, you know, that way people do know. Like, I don't ever want to encounter somebody who comes away not knowing the truth, you mm-hmm. know?
Well, and that's we spent so much of your time in it. And to me, that sums up so much of our past conversations and, you know, everything that you're trying to do, is that your goal is not to make people feel guilty. Your goal is to introduce them to this vibrant gift that God's given us, you know, absolutely. In chastity. And in your time that you've been developing this, I'm sure that, like all things of God, it just keeps growing and growing and growing.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing. I mean, even just a year ago, I wouldn't have imagined that I would be traveling from city to city, you know, speaking on stages. I didn't know this was where I was going, but I'm glad that it's where I am.
That's amazing. And my guess is Arlene, is that your future is going to hold more books, you know, writing once you're a married person, you've got a bunch of stuff to do then. Once you have kids, you're going to have a bunch of work to do then, because this is an important topic. I mean, it's one of the things that I think, to me, the values that drive us towards something godly is one of the most powerful things we can do. You know, I think that there's probably some parents that have been playing this in their car with their teens listening. If mm-hmm. you could give an encouragement to a teen that is growing up in a super sexualized world and is really wanting to be chaste, what would you say?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is that what other people think of you, what people at school think of you, what people outside of your church and family think of you is ultimately irrelevant. And so if you make the decision to practice chastity, if you make the decision to live your life in a way that aligns with the way Jesus Christ wants us to, that's okay. It's okay if somebody doesn't like it, because ultimately that person's opinion of you is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Hard for a teen to understand, but at the same time, there is such power when they do that.
Absolutely. Such, and you know, power. And this is something I wouldn't just say solely to teens. I say this to everyone. Find friends who believe what you do. Find friends who believe what you do, and surround yourself with them and share your struggles with them, because that will provide you with a support system that will make navigating this world a lot easier.
And you've really created a community, you know, online. You've got a lot of stuff there. You've got your books, you're doing your speaking. You really, and I think, you know, I see it just going forward, just expanding. But you've really created a community of people that can connect on this topic. Can you tell more of how people can get a hold of you, where they find out more about all the things that you're doing?
Yes, most definitely. Step one is to visit my website, which is arlenespensley.com. And I'm going to spell that because it's Arlene Spensley, and who can spell that? A-R-L-E-E-N, Spensley, S as in Sam, P as in Peter, E N as in Nancy, C as in Charles, E-L-E-Y.com, arlenespensley.com. And there you can order the book. You can read my blog posts. I post a couple times a week. And you can also find links to Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. I'm on all three. On Twitter and Instagram, I'm at Arlene Spensley, and you can look me up on Facebook as well. And I'm always looking forward to connecting with people, and you know, I'm always accepting questions and blog post ideas and things like that. I'd love to write what people would like me to write, and answer the questions that people have that maybe, you know, maybe they their parents or their churches never answered for them, especially young adults. So, yeah.
All right. Perfect. Well, we'll put it in the show notes. So website's got a bunch of stuff. You know, there's probably some youth leaders out there, you know, this would be a great topic for you guys to do in your group, whether you're doing the book or, you know, or, you know, it'd be great if you're wanting to fly Arlene out here, out to the West Coast, we'd be able to show her what this other side of the U.S. looks like without humidity and dangerous animals.
That would be awesome.
But I do really want to encourage parents that are listening, take this seriously. This is, you know, why I've had Arlene on the guest as a guest is there's a lot of people out there that are doing work around this topic, but few of them are doing it in such a positive direction that I think will really help our kids instead of just creating more guilt and shame. So Arlene, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Wish you all the blessings as you go out and continue to share this tough topic. And hopefully one of these days you get to write a book that's maybe a little less difficult to share. But thank you so much for doing it.
Thanks, Chuck. I really appreciate it.
Hopefully that conversation you found as engaging as I did. It was a lot of fun to talk to Arlene and her vulnerability and openness and ability to talk about some hard things in a really open and affirming way was fantastic. A lot of fun. You know, I encourage you to connect with her on our website. There's a lot of resources there. ArleneSpensley.com. Really find her blog and her writing and stuff she puts on Facebook to be really interesting, compelling, some different viewpoints. And so encourage you to get involved with that. You know, wonder what stood out for you as you listened to this. What things do you see changing the relationship with your kids? What things do you see personally changing in your view of chastity and how you'd see it practicing in your life to model it for your kids? And so I encourage you to think about that. If you've got some things to share with me, you can send it at podcast@projectpatch.org. Once again, send me a message at podcast@projectpatch.org. Love to see those. Respond to as many as I can. You know, the other favor that I ask is if you have a chance to leave a review for us on iTunes that helps people find out about this podcast, you can share it, you can like it on Facebook, all those kind of things really help get the word out. You know, at the end of the day, we're not alone. You know, as a parent, you're not alone. You've got a lot that you're covering right now, a lot of work that you're doing. Don't be overwhelmed. Get into community. If you are interested, we've got seminars that we can bring to your community, talk about these things face to face. But at the end of the day, realize that God cares deeply about what's happening with your family. Now, go out there, connect with your family. We can help at thefamilyexperience.org.